Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
But make no mistake, we will fight this spill with everything we've got for as long as it takes. We will make BP pay for the damage their company has caused. And we will do whatever is necessary to help the Gulf Coast and its people recover from this tragedy.
President Obama, of course, from his Oval Office oil spill address last night. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Again today, I will be here for the first part of the show and then back to jury duty. And again, WNYC's Andrea Bernstein is also with me. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning, everyone.
And we have MSNBC's Chris Matthews as our first guest, whose reaction to the speech on MSNBC was so jaw-dropping that I heard them replay it on a conservative talk show this morning to agree with him. Chris Matthews also has a special airing tonight about the rise of the new right, and we'll talk about that too. Hi, Chris. Thanks so much for doing this. Welcome back.
Good morning,
to
Brian. Brian and Andrew both. Thank you.
So you and Olbermann and Howard Fineman were seriously beating up on the president there right after the speech. I thought that was the Fox News Channel's job on cable TV, not yours.
Well, I hate to see any agreement, and I don't think there is agreement. I think our critique, if I could generalize, is that we want to see action. That I grew up during the era when we saw the Soviet prominence in space in the mid-50s, 1957, with Sputnik, and there was a great American turnaround, both on the part of Congress and the president, President Eisenhower at the time, to really build up America's education, especially in the physical sciences, and to really challenge the Soviets for space supremacy. And it worked, and America really got its act together and really turned. And I think that's one of the great things about America. We're not good at long-range thinking, but we're very good at reacting to challenges like at Pearl Harbor. And I think that this was one of those challenges that could get us to be a better country. And yet I didn't hear a iron-like turn last night from dependence on fossil fuels, when it's now obvious to everyone that we're going deeper and deeper into dangerous waters to get the oil, that it's not an argument about whether we can sustain this oil strategy, but how long can we? And at some point, we're going to have to go to some other source of energy. And it's so obvious, and yet the president didn't really exhibit that knowledge last night.
I'm not sure that we heard the same speech. What did you need to hear along those lines? Because By my rough estimate, he spent maybe the last third of the speech on transitioning to renewables. The lead editorial in the Wall Street Journal today, Murdoch's Wall Street Journal, has the cut line, Obama is trying to link the Gulf Gusher to his moribund green agenda. So wasn't it there?
Isn't it amazing how we see the glass half full and half empty?
I guess.
But I don't hear any disagreement on the moribund green agenda part.
What do you mean?
I do think that the president is getting criticism from the right and the left. And the right clearly thinks he shouldn't have a green agenda, and the left thinks it is moribund, without a doubt. I do want to sort of say that I did hear a reference to the man in the moon, which is the sort of traditional American call to arms, Chris. So did that not move you at all?
No, I guess I'm waiting to see a decision point. Is there going to be an energy bill? Is there going to be a push away from the Markey Waxman effort or off on top of it coming out of the House, where Pelosi was so tough and successful in getting through a bill against all kinds of ferocity? And now we have a case which is a major case that shows they're right. We have to do something. And yet it's always going to come down to, of course, the 60 votes in the Senate and the need to try to poach, Scott Brown or the two senators from Maine or Lindsey Graham, or maybe going over to Dick Lugar in Indiana and trying to find that 60th or 50-some vote and then on to 60. I know it's hard, but I think the message has to be hard and strong. I mean, let's remember that the president had energy lined up in the queue until he began to play games on behalf of a desperate Harry Reid and said, oh, we're going to do immigration first. Well, wait a minute. That was just pure politics. That was a feint. And then he said, oh, no, I guess we're not going to do immigration first. And then we're going to go back, back to energy. Now, are we going to try to do this in the lame duck session? How are we going to formulate this? Is it going to have a tax feature? Is it going to be subsidies? I mean, what's it going to be? I guess I want to see a program.
And that's what you said on TV last night. You were especially critical of the president for not giving us more of a how he plans to get the country off of our oil addiction. Is the Oval Office, though, an Oval Office speech, the venue for that, rather than, you know, expressing the firm determination, putting it on the agenda, and then the how will come out over subsequent days and weeks?
I hope, and if our critique on the center left is helpful in that, I hope it is, because I think that the right wing agenda, as voiced by the Journal, is clearly against any kind of transition. I mean, clearly there's a value difference in these critiques. I mean, on the right they don't want a transition. On the center left, I think people want to see action at this point of opportunity.
It's interesting also because there is legislation right now in the U.S. Senate that he could have referred to. There is climate change legislation introduced by Senator Kerry. There is an emergency transit bill introduced by Senator Dodd. I mean, you know, we heard a lot about renewables last night, solar energy and wind power. The word gasoline wasn't mentioned, except that, you know, I'm imagining, Chris, that the people that you were profiling in your documentary, The Rise of the New Right, would not be so happy to hear anything about curtailing gasoline use or any of the other measures that, you know, the sort of think tank people argue need to be taken to have a really oil independent future.
Well, when you hear the voices we have on in our doc tonight at 7, you'll be so staggered by the ideological ferocity of people, you'll wonder whether anyone has any collective memory of the McCarthy period, of the know-nothings, of all the stuff we've been through in our history in terms of reaction. And you'll wonder, didn't these people know the horror of those moments when we did engage in that kind of politics? But here it comes again, and on top of it all, the sense that this administration is a tyranny, that it's illegitimate, that it's somehow foreign-based, that the president is not an American. And then on top of that, this resort to what's called Second Amendment remedies to those who don't like the policies of the U.S. Congress right now. Gunplay, basically. The voices you hear from people like Orly Tates and Alan Keyes and Dick Armey and even Sharon Engel, who's running for the Senate in Nevada, are scary.
So there you have it. It's sort of like they're going to get criticized. Obama's going to get criticized by Chris Matthews for not providing enough details, not offering a path or the way out, or he's going to get criticized by the, you know, the sort of new resistance that is coming up in the
country. Well, there's a difference, Andrea. I wish him well. I am encouraging him to do more of what he is. I think he has goals. I think the goals are high value. And I do think that he wants to have a secure energy future, which is clean. I think he's as sophisticated about the issues we've been discussing as any of us, or certainly as I am. More aware of the facts. I just felt that last night was not really developed yet into where they're going to take us. And maybe it's because nobody wants to hear the word tax on anything today in an economy which is depressed.
And listeners will take your calls and comments here on the president's speech. We've had our Facebook question on this up through the morning. Our comments page is open at WNYC.org. And it only matters a little what Andrea Bernstein or Brian Lehrer or Chris Matthews thinks. What do you think about the president's speech last night, if you watched it, and the larger response to both the oil spill in particular and energy policy? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Chris, it did strike me, even though I think in this conversation so far I've been in the role of defending the president, I was surprised that he put new ideas, the request for new ideas on the table at this late date. He's got the cap and trade bill, the Kerry Lieberman bill. It's already gone through the House. He could have sat there and said, come on, you people in the Senate, let's get it together and pass this bill. We are almost there. Instead, he said, I will listen to any new ideas from left or right or wherever, as if it was day one.
And then they were sort of all his ideas when he laid them out. Well, some
well,
say this,
he should
some
lay
say
out.
That.
He should lay out his ideas. But why is he open to new ideas, framing it as if it's day one, Chris?
I think it might be part of the oratory in the sense that Remember, with health care, he was offering the Republicans the chance to put things on the table that would insure the 30 million uninsured. But he kept saying, if you don't put something on the table, I will insist what we have on the table be passed.
And then so he had that bipartisan televised conference. Remember that?
Yeah.
Is he going to do that on energy, do you
think?
Well,
it seems like he's saying to the Republicans, to use the crude term, put up or shut up, meaning if you don't have something to offer, then look at what I have to offer and consider it yes or no. But don't say there's another approach unless you're willing to put that approach on the table. So I guess he's trying to say to them, come out and acknowledge we need to have an energy transition, acknowledge the fact that we have to accelerate it, to use his term last night, and tell me how you're going to do it. And I think that will force the Wall Street Journal people, well, it won't force them to do anything. They'll basically just come out against taxes. But at least in terms of the rhetoric, it forces them to admit they have nothing to sell.
He had so much on his agenda for this speech. He had to reassure people. He had to perform the traditional Oval Office speech role of things are bad, but I'm the commander-in-chief, and we will find our way out of this. He had to defend his own administration, both their initial response and everything that had happened in his Department of the Interior up until the spill. So there was really a lot of work for those 17 minutes.
Chris, on the rise of the right, this was predictable, wasn't it? I remember the Democratic primary season when Obama was running against Hillary Clinton, and one of the arguments for Obama was that he wouldn't be the lightning rod for the right that she is. Remember that? I never believed that, because the right will react to anyone's progressive agenda. And, oh, by the way, he's black. I thought the backlash would be similarly fierce whichever one was elected. So are you surprised by what you report on in your documentary tonight?
Yeah, I keep asking myself, I guess when I do have time to think about it, that great question, that ticklish question, if Senator Clinton, now Secretary Clinton, were the president, and she could have been, it was close, would that virulence be there? I don't know. Obviously, the Clintons are more comfortable as Americans to some other Americans. I mean, they're sort of Arkansans. They certainly he is, and they come across as sort of homegrown more than perhaps Obama seems to some people. He's obviously, they're white and he's black. But I don't know. I think some of this is this weird sort of bitterness you get. Remember back in 68 when people who had real problems with the Vietnam War but were sort of supporting President Johnson because he was a Democrat. Then the minute Nixon came in, the ferocity of anti-war among Democrats just blew. And you go, wait a minute, weren't they just as mad at Johnson for prosecuting the war? Yes, but they didn't want to say so. And they're sort of mad at themselves for not blasting Johnson earlier in 67, 68 during the buildup. It actually began in 65. And so I think you're hearing that from the Republicans. Now, some of this is perhaps sounds like psychobabble, but I think a lot of the Republicans were angry with President George W. Bush. They didn't think much of him, really, in terms of fiscal policy, sanity, in terms of spending, a restraint. He never vetoed a spending bill. And I think in the back of their minds, they do question in the Iraq War. And yet they didn't really explode against him for partisan reasons. And then the minute a Democrat got to be president, all of a sudden they care about fiscal policy. Yeah. All of a sudden they care about the doubling of the national debt that went on under Bush. So some of it is sort of a delayed response and maybe a sense of real frustration that the ideological cause they do believe in, which is smaller government, they never really advanced or protected under Bush.
Well, in fact,
I think that's part of this.
I hear you. And I don't know if you get into this in the piece, but the Tea Party movement is old, isn't it? Dick Armey. I mean, really, the demographics that I see are over 50 white people making up the heart of the Tea Party, which makes it a backlash, not a movement for generational political change like the Obama voters were and like the young Reagan supporters were once upon a time. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. And I think one of the things we try to get to in the doc tonight is, and I can't get to the whole thing because I don't want to be too looking backwards, but, you know, American history is fairly easy to track. It's this progressive movement, broadly defined, which was abolitionism, of course, Reconstruction, even though it was short-circuited in the 1870s, and an attempt to really fight Jim Crow, and, of course, suffrage, and all the good things that we've fought for, like civil rights, and it always goes forward. And now for people with different sexual orientations, I mean, it's going forward all the time. There is a forward motion. Sometimes
Teddy
it's two steps forward. And against that is just the know-nothings and the Klan and the John Birch Society. And we try, and the Joe McCarthy's and the Pat Buchanan's. And we show that as a continuum. But lately it's gotten to be had this Second Amendment aspect to it, which is really scary. They believe they need to be armed to fight the federal government, and I think that is new.
Only a few. Is that really fair to
paint
it with that
Sharon
broad brush?
Engel, who's the Democratic or the Republican nominee for senator in Nevada, says that we have to look at Second Amendment remedies, she said in this new story that just came out, when we think that Congress has gone too far. Second Amendment remedies. Mm. It's her phrase.
And I think
yes, I hear that.
You know, just to circle back to the speech, I mean, I think that is the dilemma for the president in delivering a speech like this. I mean, here's the biggest environmental disaster ever in the United States. It affects initially mostly red states, not necessarily Obama supporters. The reaction on the ground looks like it's not been as effective as it could be. I mean, people understand that Obama didn't start the oil spill, but there is a lot of consternation about how he's responding to. And so to take this moment and seize it and pivot to a national energy policy in the context of when he's been, you know, when he has so much of this vocal opposition, I mean, in the end, and I, you know, I guess we'll find out more in the fall about just what the numbers are behind it. But it's certainly very loud and has a lot of mouthpieces. And to say, okay, what we need is a national energy policy, and this is not healthcare. This is not, you know, Jane and Joe America feeling something in their pockets and understanding there's a desperate situation. This is something that is abstract. It's about the future. It's about something that is oncoming, but not necessarily something that is here yet. And that is a very heavy lift for the president, given the fact that the economy is not picking up steam and all the other things, you know, are still going on.
Chris, I know you got to go in 60 seconds. Just one question on you. Where do you see your place in the crazy media world of cable TV news? With your buzzsaw commentary, some see you as a tough, hardball journalist, no fear or favor. Some see you as the vuvuzela of the left. How do you see it?
Well, I think you've done a good job of describing it. I think I'm a combination, and I hope I'm protean. I hope I change. But I think if we have a niche at hardball, as opposed to, say, where Keith is or Rachel is, my great colleagues, I think we're somewhere at the debate. I think we do have more debate than almost any show on cable. In other words, I had Mike Pence on. I had my friends call me up on the left, and they call me and say, why do you have Republicans on? I mean, that's how absurd it's gotten to the point now. Why do you have somebody on who disagrees with you? Well, that's what we do. We do have arguments here. It isn't an amen chorus. And I think that's what I really want to do. I love, in addition to caring a lot about the issues you care about, certainly your listeners do, and they care about them a lot. I do enjoy the governance process and the debate about it. I do enjoy the arguments. I love the fact that America has always had a lot of these arguments somewhere in the 40-yard lines in the middle. We are a bourgeois country. We're not a frightening country generally. We tend to go back to a true north, which is somewhere in a sense of mixed capitalism and democracy. And I do think we do come back to the center after some of these periods. But I do enjoy the combat. I guess that's my answer to you, Brian. I enjoy the combat.
Chris Matthews, his documentary, The Rise of the New Right, at 7 o'clock tonight on MSNBC. Thank you very much.
And you too, Andrew. Thank you.
And let's remind people to keep calling in on this subject. I will continue to take your calls on President Obama's speech, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. We'd like your reaction, your comments, what you liked that you heard, what you would have liked to have heard that you didn't.
Coming in on our Facebook page already this morning, Spence writes, a detailed plan would have been better, much too general. Kathina writes, pretty much what I expected. I don't think it's very realistic to expect him to fix it. Carlita writes, would have liked more specifics, but unlike some others, I didn't wish he'd appear angrier. Anger mongering is not going to make things better. So Andrea will take your calls. I also have to fly the coop back to jury duty again. So Andrea Bernstein, WNYC Intrepid reporter, have a good rest of the show.
Thanks, Brian.
And I'll talk to you all as soon as I can.